Come be a part of Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics with your host, Dr. Ed Holliday. Hear the voices of liberty speaking all across America. Doc Holliday provides thought-provoking interviews and commentary about the issues and actions that are afflicting this country and what we need to do to get America back on track. Get fired up. Get inspired. Get on board with Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics right now.
And the plot thickens, patriots. Who is it going to be that will represent the conservatives in November of 2012 against Barack Obama? We don't know yet. We do not know yet. The fat lady has not sung. Last week, we had Mississippi and Alabama in the Deep South. And we're going to see if Romney could break through, which some polls showed he was winning in Mississippi before the vote. But what happened? Well, Santorum, the man from Pennsylvania, came down into the Deep South and he won Mississippi and Alabama. What a great night it was for Rick Santorum. And Newt was fighting right along in there with him. And Romney, he had to say he did well because he did better than he thought, maybe. But the bottom line is there was a thickening of the plot. And what does that mean? I'm going to get to that in just a few minutes, but let me tell you exactly what we got going on today's show. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics right here on WebTalkRadio.net. That's WebTalkRadio.net. We're glad to have you. This is sort of like a special edition. We got a lot going on. I told you last week that we were going to have Bill Federer, who's the author of What Every American Needs to Know About the Quran, A History of Islam and the United States. It's a book that I want to talk to Bill Federer about, but because of the tragic incident last week between the American soldier who has allegedly killed some Afghan civilians in an Afghan village. So as we get more details, we'll go into that. I just thought we'll hold that off for another week or two. I do want to talk to Bill Federer. You need to hear the interview. And we're going to have him on Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics. We're just not going to do it this week. So, therefore, what are we going to have? I told you last week we still got some good snippets from our conversation with Foster Freeze. If you did not hear last week's show, you need to go back and listen to our interview with Foster Freeze when he was in India. Called us all the way from India to tell us about why he thinks Rick Santorum should be our next president. So go back to last week's show if you missed it. Make sure you hear that show. Foster Freeze is a great American, and we're going to have some more of his interview in just a few minutes today. Also going to be talking to Judson Phillips, and I talked about him first last fall right here on this radio show when he was one of the first Tea Party leaders to come out and endorse anybody. He endorsed Newt Gingrich. He's not falling back from that endorsement. He's still on Newt's team, and we're going to have him on in just a few minutes and tell us why he thinks Newt needs to plow on and why he likes Newt Gingrich and why he supports him to be our next president of the United States. So Judson Phillips coming up, and I'll what's going on with the primaries. We're going to be doing that. So a lot in today's show. The Tombstone of the Week Award goes to someone that really made my stomach turn sick when I saw the highlights of what he had done. And not only he together with the niece of Nancy Pelosi. So that ought to tell you something, who's going to get this week's Tombstone of the Week Award for what he did and what he promoted on his show. Absolutely sickening to me. And I'm going to be telling you about that on the Tombstone of the Week Award, this week's rock-splitting Obama fact. Wow, the health care bill is going to be debated in the Supreme Court very shortly, but the Congressional Budget Office has come out with something that we knew all along. But we're just going to be talking about on this week's rock-splitting Obama fact, and so you hang on to the end of the show. You don't want to miss that. Wow, what a show we got. It's piled in here once again. I got to tell you about last week's Mississippi-Alabama primaries in the Deep South. It was going gangbusters. You see how Mitt comes in. Romney comes in of his team. He's got the organization. He's got money. He got his ground game going. I'm telling you, I had about 10 different direct mail mail outs, at least 12 to 15 robocalls for Mitt Romney's campaign, or is a, and some of it may have been coming from the super PAC, but I can see they come into a town and just really, really almost take the thing over in the whole state. Our governor, Governor Phil Bryant, is a state of Mississippi. He prides himself in being a Tea Party candidate and then a Tea Party governor. And then he turns around and supports Mitt Romney and endorsed him. And that didn't sit well with a lot of Tea Partiers in Mississippi. I can tell you that right now. But it looked as if, again, the Republican establishment says, let's get behind somebody. People talk them into saying, okay, we got to get behind Mitt Romney so that we can make sure we win in November. Well, I'm telling you, it was spoken loud and clear in Mississippi and Alabama that not everybody's for Mitt Romney. That doesn't mean they won't get behind him if he finally wins this nomination, but everybody's not ready to hand it over to Mitt Romney yet. And most, at least of all, is Newt Gingrich. He's the man that has only won two states, South Carolina and Georgia, and he wants the bulldog on, and that's why we're going to be talking to Judson Phillips of the Tea Party Nation in just a few minutes and tell us more about that. But I've got to say that Mitt spent the money, probably 5-1 or better here in Mississippi, and I'm from Tupelo. This show comes right out of Tupelo, Mississippi, the birthplace of Elvis Presley. It's in North Mississippi. And I have to tell you that Mitt Romney never came up to North Mississippi. And I heard more than one person say, well, you know, they weren't sure who they're going to vote for, but Newt and Rick Santorum both came to North Mississippi. They said, why couldn't Mitt Romney? So I know he didn't get as many votes out of North Mississippi just because, hey, I guess he didn't think he needed to come up here and go after the rural vote. He wanted to go after our big cities in Mississippi. Our big cities are small compared to everywhere else in the country. We got Jackson and probably combined Gulfport and Biloxi together. That's sort of like a metro area in a small way. But anyway, Romney did not want to go to the small towns, I guess, or small rural places here in Tupelo. We've got about 35,000 people, but it's a big draw area. And Rick Santorum came twice. I mean, he came once and then came back a couple of days later on a Sunday, went to Mass here in Tupelo with the Catholic Church here, St. James Church right here in Tupelo. Then he went to the Southern Baptist Church with Congressman Alan Nunley. In a minute, I'll play a little bit about what Alan Nunley had to say about Santorum. He came out, our congressman from the 1st District in Mississippi, said he's behind Santorum. He didn't get with the establishment behind Mitt Romney, and he stepped out. And I can tell you, Rick Santorum was well received in Tupelo, and I think one reason is he was glad to come and talk to the people. So there's some things that are moving on. Last week we told you, you heard me. If you didn't hear last week's show, go back and listen. I told Rick Santorum himself, keep this thing focused on jobs. And I did get to talk with some of his campaign staff and zero in on that he's got to stay away from the social issues. People know where he stands, but the media wants to pound that into everybody's head so that all the liberals, all the moderates, all the independents think Rick Santorum some junkie out there that just does nothing but want to be everybody be like a caveman. and that is so far from the truth. He has such a good message on getting jobs, working with all Americans, and he's got to stay on that message. You heard what Foster Freeze and I talked about last week. So I feel better about, at least we know we got the message of Rick Santorum. I believe he has changed. And is that attributed to Doc Holliday? Well, I did get the message to him, personally and to his campaign staff. Let's see if he'll zero in on jobs, jobs, jobs. And whoever ends up being a nominee, it's going to make the Republican Party better, and it's going to make the nominee stronger if we focus on the jobs and the situation that this administration has done. And I'll mention a little bit more about that when I play a little bit of the interview last week with Foster Freeze in a few minutes. So, wow, what What a show. We have just packed everything in. And I said the plot thickens because who knows who's going to be the nominee? It is not inevitable. Mitt Romney has not got it sewn up. And he hasn't got enough. If he does have enough delegates to win on the first ballot, it will be a political fist fight. When I don't mean literally a fist fight, but politically, there can be a fist fight on that convention floor with the delegates slugging it out. And it could be Newt. It could be Rick. You know, conceivably, it could be somebody who's not running. I don't think that would happen. But is that bad for the Republican Party? All the infighting? I've talked to others about it. And so many people think it is. But, you know, when I look at it, there's so many people who want to just get Obama out. I believe that the time spent will keep everything speculating. It will keep the media from bowing down and praising our glorious leader. And you know, they do it all the time. You know they're going to be on the side. They're going to be so biased, which they already are. They're going to be so biased, the mainstream media, for Barack Obama. The longer Republicans keep this thing in play, it's going to keep them. You may even argue between, you know, they talk about the negative ads, and Romney sure sent out the negative ads down here in Mississippi, and I mean, it made Rick Santorum sound like he was some far-off liberal. You got the mainstream media tries to paint him as too far right wing for anybody, and you got Mitt Romney telling you that he's the biggest spending liberal that's ever walked in the halls of Congress, just about. So it's almost crazy. You have to really be able to decipher, discern, have wisdom about what's going on. And I'm still saying this is making the Republican Party bigger, better, and more productive heading into November. Some people don't believe that, but I can start to see now what's going on. And I tell you, all this infighting, building up structures within each state, it is going to be well done and well served for whoever gets the nomination. I wish I could talk more about that. So much going on, more states coming up. We're going to keep you in tune right here on Doc Holliday's Tea Party, because I will tell you things that nobody else will. And that's why I'm coming to this microphone every week, so that you can be informed. Saying all that, we got to get to this week's Tombstone of the Week Award, and that's coming up. And let me tell you, Bill Maher, he's won the Tombstone of the Week Award several times for his actions. But there was something that made my stomach turn. I'd heard about it, clicked on a video, and there I saw they used a film taken by none other than Nancy Pelosi's niece, and on Bill Maher's show. They came down to Mississippi, and they put several individuals in Mississippi. I'm not denying these people live here. Yes, we have a lot of poor. We have a lot of people who we are the poorest state in the nation. But the way they handled this, the way they went in and mocked our very people, because some are poor. And they said, you know, don't think they just picked a handful. The first 30 people they saw off the airplane would have been just like them. Now, that is a bold-faced lie. Bald-faced lie. It's balderdash. And it's unfitting for that to happen in America. The way they treated Rush Limbaugh after what he said about Miss Fluck, I'm telling you that this, to me, is more astounding, pathetic, snobbery. How do you want to say it? Bill Maher, who gives $1 million to reelect Barack Obama, he comes down to Mississippi, brings people out, this niece of Nancy Pelosi, Wicked Witch of the West, the niece comes down here and puts on Bill Maher's show some of these people who, God love them, they are human beings who have some pride. And then Bill Maher has the I don't even know what to call it. The word is such snobbery. But to make fun of them because they don't have teeth. And they have missing teeth. And they don't have the money to get it. He laughs at them. He laughs at them and laughs at their lack of education. Now, I could go to any state in America. We can find some sane people in every place in America. I hate the poverty when you see it. I hate the conditions some people have to live in and some people choose to live in. But I'm telling you, Bill Maher made fun of those people. And why he's still on HBO, why he is still praised by the left-wing media after what he's done to these people, mocking God's creatures. Now, he doesn't believe in God, so he doesn't mind mocking somebody if they're conservative. But he's mocking God's creatures who are endowed by their creator with their unalienable rights to pursue life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And Bill Maher laughs at them and mocks them because of where they live and their poverty. Mocking them living in poverty. Now that is snobbery. That's outrageous. And that's why Bill Maher and the niece of Nancy Pelosi get this week's Doc Holliday's Tombstone of the Week Award. That film should be buried 6 feet in the ground beneath a tombstone. Bill Maher, the snob who gives $1 million to reelect Barack Obama and won't give a dime to help somebody get some better teeth, somebody get better conditions to live in. He laughs at them and mocks them and mocks their faith. Shame on you, Bill Maher. Shame on you, Nancy Pelosi's niece. Shame on Nancy Pelosi for even allowing these conditions to carry on because of the structure that the liberals have placed on this country. Okay, I'm going to move on, but I wish I could spend more time on that, but you get the message of this week's Tombstone of the Week Award, Doc Holliday giving it to Bill Maher, Nancy Pelosi's niece. Now, I have to tell you, you are listening to Rock Splitting Politics. This is Doc Holliday's show, and I'm your host, Ed Holliday, and next week we'll have another great show coming up about what's going on in the Republican nomination. We'll get to Bill Federer and what every American needs to know about the Quran. So we got great lineup for next week, and we'll try to get some more snippets in of an interview with Foster Freeze. But I want everybody to remember you're listening to us on webtalkradio.net. That's webtalkradio.net. And a lot of great shows. You can go right there and pick out a lot of shows that they have. But the best show, as far as I'm concerned, is Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics. We're glad you're listening to us. All new listeners, welcome. You can go back and look in the archives. Did have a show called Doc Holliday's Tea Party before it became Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics. There's a place you can go back and listen to some of the old shows there in the archive. And be sure, if you want to know the ebbs and flow of this Republican nomination campaign, just go back and listen to the last several months. We've kept up with it here on Doc Holliday's Tea Party better than anybody. I think you'll see what's going on. And now it's time to talk to Judson Phillips of the Tea Party Nation. This is a conversation I had before the Mississippi-Alabama primaries. Let's go right into this conversation right now. And now here we are. He's down, been down twice. Can he come up for the third time? And that's really what I want to talk about right now. How, I guess the question is, looking at things now, he said he was the tortoise, but how does he get to the nomination? It looks very questionable to me. How can he win the nomination where he is right now?
Well, I did a blog a few days ago where I said that, you know, those of us who support Gingrich have to accept the realization that the chances of him becoming the nominee are becoming slim. He is not mathematically eliminated, but he has got, if I remember the numbers correctly, he's got to take 70 to get to 1144. He's got to take like 72% of the remaining delegates.
Yeah. So where's the math?
Yeah, it's definitely a tough road to hoe. Gingrich could conceivably do it. He needs another breakout moment like he had in South Carolina. And honestly, he probably needs Rick Santorum to implode, which Santorum, with some of the stuff that's been going on, I'm a little surprised that Santorum has weathered it as well as he did. That last debate I thought was just a disaster for Santorum. And I was I watched that debate, and as soon as it was over, I just expected Santorum's numbers to crater, and it didn't happen. But I think there's a couple strategies here. Number one is to go out and get the delegates you need. And, you know, obviously you're not going to win if you don't get those delegates. But the second possibility is this. Newt doesn't have to win by winning. If he gets enough delegates in Santorum, and, you know, unless something really bizarre happens, Santorum's not getting out of the race.
Right.
If between the two of them they can deny Romney 1144 delegates, then at that point it goes to an open convention, and who knows what will happen.
You say that, but and again, all these people, when the first time they shot Newt down with the Republican establishment, how is he going to get them who control the convention? How is he going to get them to get, you know, to get the nomination? I just can't see that happening at a convention.
Well, remember, the establishment does control the party. There's no argument about that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's those delegates that are selected. They're the ones who actually vote. And remember this about Newt Gingrich, because you were in South Carolina.
Yeah.
Twice, not once, but twice, Newt Gingrich took a divided Republican audience, because this was at the debate, both mm-hmm. South Carolina debates. And for people who've not been to those debates, they divide up the ticket among the campaign. So you've got representatives from all the campaigns there.
Mm-hmm.
Newt took a seriously divided Republican room, and he united the room. He had everybody standing and cheering him. He had the Romney people standing, the Paul people standing, the Perry people standing.
He had the Tea Party people standing. I know where the Tea Party folks were sitting, and they were going nuts, you know, yelling for Newt.
Yeah, but those, you know, when he, a couple times, you know, once was John King trying to school him on his ex-wife, and Newt just, you know, Newt's like Babe Ruth in these debates. You know, he just takes a swing, and boom, the ball's going out of the park. In each of those times, Newt was able to unite the entire audience behind him. And that's something Romney has never been able to do, and honestly wouldn't be able to do, because Romney doesn't inspire anybody. Santorum, I don't think he's got it in his personality to do it either. Ron Paul certainly doesn't.
For, you know, I'm in Tupelo, Mississippi. Last night I saw Santorum and got to talk to him. And today I saw Newt. Newt was here this afternoon. And Newt has such a, you know, his message is on, just spot on. You're talking about $2.50 gas. I mean, he's got a message, and he knows. I mean, there's no doubt he's a brilliant man. And yet, the only way I can see a path, tell me what this would do. If you go to Santorum right now, it wouldn't work because he thinks he's winning. But say, look, instead of a good 8 years, we need you for 16 years. Won't you get on the VP ticket for Gingrich? And let's get this country turned around, and then we'll get it going, and you'll be able to get, after 8 years of Gingrich, we'll have 8 years of Santorum. You think that would ever fly?
I don't think it would, because none of those guys wants to play second fiddle. They will do it. You know, let's say Gingrich wins. You know, he'd go to Santorum, and at that point, Santorum would say yes, obviously. You know, you pointed out, Santorum believes he is in the lead. He does have a slight edge in delegates. You know, he's not going to play second fiddle. And, you know, I kind of don't blame him for that. You know, why do you want to wait 8 years? Because there's all kinds of things that could happen.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, eight years is just an absolute eternity. But what does need to happen, and might happen, is Santorum and Gingrich could get together and make an alliance. The whole idea behind it would be to stop Romney from getting the nomination. Because, you know, we talk about how grim Newt's numbers are. Santorum's numbers are not really great either. If I remember the numbers correctly, Romney has to get slightly less than 50% of the remaining delegates to get the win.
Right.
Santorum, I think, has to get about 60% of the remaining delegates to get the win. Now, Romney has only been pulling in at about, you know, on average, about 35 or 40% on any given state. And some of the states left are winner-take-all states. A lot of them are proportional states. So he's got a long way to go. And if Gingrich and Santorum stay in the race, it's entirely possible this thing could go to the convention. And if Santorum and Gingrich would unite, you know, form an alliance, it is entirely possible that could send this thing to a convention. I endorse Gingrich. I'll settle for Santorum if for some reason Newt is not able to pull it out. But if not, let's go to a brokered convention, because whatever comes out of a brokered convention would be better than Mitt Romney.
Well, that's what, and of course everybody's saying, oh no, we can't have that. Then there's no way that we can gather steam and beat Obama in November. And yet you don't think a brokered convention would be upsetting to the Republican Party and ability to raise money and build the base?
No, because you always have to remember this. When you have an incumbent president running for re-election, the election is always a referendum on that person. And look what Barack Obama is going to be dealing with. He's desperately trying to avoid that Middle East war, because as it is, there's a real possibility gas prices will be $5 a gallon this summer. Mm-hmm. If Iran and Israel go to war and Iran shuts down the Straits of Hormuz, $5, forget it. It'll be $10 a gallon, and we'll have riots in the streets. Unemployment's back up to 9.1% after dropping down to 8%. And the real number behind that is we have now had more Americans who are idled, not working, any time since the Great Depression.
Right, and I know, if we put our, and that's once we can get a nominee that will stick to all these the statistics that are so real and hurting to this administration, then I do see, even if we have a brokered convention, there would be a momentum and a groundswell of anybody but Obama. Let's get him out.
Historically, since probably the 60s, no president has ever won a re-election with unemployment above about 7 or 7.1%. Obama, the new unemployment numbers right now are 9.1%. Even with him cooking the books, and we know he cooks the books, there is no way he can get unemployment down to 7% by the time the election comes along, particularly if we have $5 a gallon gas this summer. You'll see unemployment go north of 10%.
Yeah, it's hurt.
Everything's going to be more expensive.
And that was my interesting conversation with Judson Phillips of Tea Party Nation. And a couple of nuggets come away from that is the Newt is in here. It sounds like he's going to be in here to stay. And the other thing is that people like Judson Phillips, they feel like Newt is the man, the one, to turn this nation around, and that's why they are dogmatic and hanging on to who they see will be the best president that the United States could have, as in Newt Gingrich. And I told you we're going to get Foster Freeze back on a little bit from the interview I did last week, so let's go right back and listen to Foster Freeze, and then we're going to have the rock-splitting Obama fact to end up the show. So let's listen to Foster first, and then we'll get to this week's rock-splitting Obama fact.
I was looking with Lynn and I are on this little trip of a lifetime. We're celebrating our 50th wedding anniversary, and that's why we're in India right now making this little trip.
And I appreciate you coming on a radio show in the middle of your anniversary trip.
Well, it's great to talk to you, Doc, because I just love to talk about our country. And while Rick Santorum is a great candidate, my support is really for the country, and I think he'll do a good job and make a good president, but it's just so important that we get the best person that can replace Obama. And as I said earlier, because of his youthfulness and his capacity and his intelligence and his speaking ability, I don't know if you had a chance to hear his speech at the Iowa victory where he wrote himself and delivered it without any teleprompters, and it was very moving about his 72-year-old grandfather, who's a coal miner and dug coal to age 72. But as I started to say over here, as you go to some of these incredible sightseeing things like Angkor Wat, there's no railings, and it's very treacherous going up and down these steps. And just a simple thing like that, if you look at how many billions and billions of dollars we have invested in railings. Now, I'm not suggesting we shouldn't do it, but it just shows how these other countries have an advantage over us, because they don't have all the OSHA regulations. They don't have expensive health care, where we have the best health care in the world, and that comes with a price. So,
right. And Foster, I think what you're trying to say is that we need regulations, but we need common sense regulations, and the Obama administration's gone way, way over.
Yeah, well, a good example, I'm just talking to some people, Doc, that are in the business of transporting gasoline, and these tanker trucks have three different compartments for the various grades of gasoline, mm-hmm. and they used to fill them from the top, and that created fumes, which were dangerous. So now they have another kind of about a foot and a half, 2 foot holes or some kind of a device underneath, and they hook the gas line there, and then it fills from the bottom up. Mm-hmm. Well, now there's a rule called HM 213D, it's called, for I think the Department of Transportation or someone's putting out, that they want to replace all these little attachments because there's about a gallon of gas in each of the three attachments. Well, there's no commercial device existing to replace them. Uh-huh. They haven't developed it, and it would cost maybe $5,000 per tanker, and they haven't judged, you know, why do they want to do it.
And that's where Lisa Jackson, the head of the EPA, like she said, it's not her position to worry about jobs, evidently, because she's killed more jobs probably than any one person, I believe, that's in the last few years. It's got to be Lisa Jackson and the EPA.
Yeah, well, also, Doc, there's just a whole attitude of, just think of the BP oil problem in the Gulf, where I'm told, and I should really verify this before I talk to you about it on the radio, but okay. Someone told me that President Obama's commission that studied it didn't really think that they had to put on a moratorium in drilling, but he went ahead and did it anyway. And there's all those people now are dependent on the government when they put the moratorium, and a lot of the drilling rigs, I think, had to move to...
Right, moved on to Brazil Africa. Or other places in Africa. And that moratorium, you're right. I remember the researchers said, you know, there's no need for it, but the administration did it anyway.
Yeah, you almost think that, you know, they purposely try to keep more people dependent on the government. There's a fellow named Vlasic, who I think was governor of one of the Midwestern states, who now heads up the food stamp operation. And he bragged about the fact that we're really getting the word out because now we've got 46 million people on food stamps. Mm. And so, how do you get more people on food stamps? That seems like not the best goal to have.
No, because somebody's having to pay for those.
The other thing, too, that this 3-inch darter smelt out in the San Joaquin Valley. You know, my gosh, you look at these young fellows we send off to fight Al-Qaeda with a strap of gun on their back, and it seems like this snarter, darter snail or whatever it's called, darter smelt, I'm sorry. You know, maybe it's time that he sacrificed his life for the good of the country, because there's all kinds of farmers that aren't able to produce food. And
that's
and
out in California, is that right?
Yeah, San Joaquin Valley.
Right. And so all these things coming together, and what gets me is at this point, the odds on or the betting people say that it looks like Obama should get reelected. And if all this going on, how do we get the word out to the American citizens? Look, you know, we are in a nation in decline if we don't turn this thing around, get somebody in the White House.
But if you look at the situation we're in, this is not going to be a Republican or Democrat solution. This has to be an American solution where all of us have to pull together and get us back on track. If you take 8 zeros off the federal numbers,
right,
to compare it to what a household might be, uh-huh. you wind up with some household or some person making $21,000 a year, uh-huh. spending $38,000 a year, and it has a $142,000 credit card tab. And then the folks in Washington, D.C. said, well, we ought to maybe adjust the budget. And what did they reduce the budget by? $385. So that's hardly going to make a difference, is it?
That's a great way to look at it. I appreciate you giving us those numbers there, because that really brings it into perspective. And once again, great, great nuggets from Foster Fries. And we appreciate him calling from India to be on Doc Holliday's Rock Split in Politics. A couple nuggets from what he just said is, number one, we have to be for America. Americans must pull together and get behind whoever the nominee happens to be. We've got to get Obama out. And the second nugget he told us wasn't just a great way to explain what this nation is. When you take those zeros off and look at it, it's like a family that's earning $23,000 a year, spending $38,000 a year, and has a $143,000 credit card bill. Now that's beginning to make sense and help people to understand what the mess this nation is in. Wow, we got to get to this week's Rock Splitting Obama fact, and that leads right in what we just talked about. Do you use Foster Freeze's numbers to better understand the financial mess and the potential for absolute catastrophe if we don't turn this thing around. And to no surprise, as Gomer Pyle might say, those who remember Gomer Pyle, surprise, surprise, surprise. Last week, the Congressional Budget Office, the non-political, non-partisan Congressional Budget Office, they came out with a new projection of the health care costs over a 10-year period. It was last year the Democrats forced this thing down our throats, said it's going to be $940 billion, less than $1 trillion over 10 years. They said it would help reduce our national debt and our deficit. What a joke. And we said that. Those of us who said, don't pass this health care plan. It's pathetic. It will never work. And now the Congressional Budget Office says the Democrats were lying all along. They knew the numbers were cooked. You can go back and listen to Paul Ryan. Before this bill was passed by the Democrats of Pelosi and Reid and Obama, Paul Ryan, Congressman Paul Ryan, spelled out the disaster that it would be, and the numbers were cooked and fixed. He said so before it was passed, and now the Congressional Budget Office proves that Congressman Paul Ryan was right all along, and President Barack Obama, the rock-splitting Obama fact that this week, he misled this nation. He knew the numbers were wrong. He stood there and said that this would help reduce the deficit, reduce national debt, and now what was supposed to be $940 billion, the Congressional Budget Office now says it's going to be $1.6 trillion, almost doubled what they told us it would be. And that's this week's rock-splitting Obama fact. Let it sink in, and that's why we have to get together and remember the three most important words of 2012, get Obama out. Now, let me just tell you, this week's show has been a lot of things packed in. The Republican nomination goes on. It goes forward. And we don't know who the nominee will be yet, even though some people think Romney's inevitable. The fat lady has not sung. And we're seeing what Rick Santorum, Newt Gingrich, and Ron Paul still hanging in there. And we're going to keep following that every week right here on Doc Holliday's Tea Party and Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics, unlike any other place. So come here, get your information, and get an inside view that nobody else gets. And I'm telling you that next week's show, we will get our author, Bill Federer, right here to talk about what every American needs to know about the Quran, a history of Islam and the United States. We're going to get to his interview next week. Be sure to listen to that as we continue with this race for the Republican nomination. It's exciting, folks. Don't get disappointed. Don't get disillusioned. Just remember, Obama is sinking himself, just like we heard from the Congressional Budget Office. And that's why I'm telling you, let's leave this show until next week. Remember, get Obama out.
Thanks for joining us today, and remember to listen again next week for another edition of Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics. You can order Ed's new book, Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics, Tea Party versus the Status Quo, by clicking on the book cover right in front of you on the screen. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you again next week.